Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Side of balance, shoot a three, toss to Fry, fire.
Yes!
Kyrie Irving from 25.
Perfect for three.
Kyrie inside, double clutches, spins it off! Now a chance to tie or take the lead. Corner, Kyrie for the lead.
The line! He rubber rimmed it!
DeRozan between the legs, rhythms in. Money. Wayne Casey, oh, technical foul! That went into the crowd, absolutely. Lowry off his own foot. You can't do it once it goes into the crowd. It's a tech. Fry pops. Takes his time. Fires.
Got it! He's unbelievable!
Kevin Love came to the ball. Over top LeBron James, thrown up beautifully by Kyrie. And that'll do it. A one and go with it. Playoff type intensity.
If you look at Ohio State, if they beat Michigan State, if they were able to beat Michigan at home, and even skip a Big Ten championship game, their resume alone and with the way they're trending, the committee after the rankings putting them at a solid two kind of shows you that there's no way that they'll take Ohio State at a solid two and move them to five if Penn State, for example, becomes a Big Ten champion. So Ohio State, even though they don't control their own destiny to get to Indianapolis, in my opinion, based on what we see from the committee, they do control their own destiny to get into the playoff if they beat Michigan State and Michigan. You cannot build a case for Louisville on their resume.
I was really glad to see Ohio State number two, because I think Ohio State is in another league outside of Alabama's universe. Assuming Ohio State beats Michigan, and I frankly think they will after what I saw from Michigan the other night in Iowa, I move them off as well. I don't think we have to debate Ohio State versus the Big Ten championship. I do think the Big Ten is the best conference in college football this year. I don't think there is an argument about that. So I believe that if it's Penn State and Wisconsin, for the sake of argument, in the Big Ten championship game, I would take the winner of that game. I think they would have proven enough, particularly Penn State, having beaten Ohio State.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh my goodness gracious, how about that? The committee that really means nothing, that is continuing to sell commercials each and every week between now and the day after the conference championship games, the committee continues to hook us in, and we're just like, you know, we got this hook in our mouth. We're just, guy, here I go. That's how I feel like right now. I can't talk. I got a hook. They just reel us in. They're winding it up and pulling us in. Michigan lost to Iowa, an unranked team, did not drop in the top four or out of the top four and even out of their spot at number three of the college football playoff final four. Clemson loses, does not even drop out of the final four. As a matter of fact, got themselves pushed back up into the final four. I mean, Washington drops out of the final four, and we call them final four. I'm just saying the top four teams in the country. It's not final yet. Obviously, this is the purpose of the discussion. But Washington's loss cost them a spot. Ohio State jumps up from five into the top four at number two with their second incredibly impressive win, a 62-3 win blowout over Maryland. And now we have to try to make sense of what this means. Welcome to the extravaganza. You also heard in the open, in the montage, a little highlight package there of the Cavaliers' win over the Toronto Raptors. They continue to own We the North. Once again, as they took them apart in the Eastern Conference Finals, just seems like yesterday. It was actually about 4 months ago, but they did it, 5 months ago maybe. At any rate, you heard a little bit from the Cavaliers' win. LeBron James with a near triple-double in front of Oscar Robertson, who was courtside for that game, which is kind of cool. 28-14-9 for LeBron James, 24 for Kyrie Irving. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. But the college football commentary you heard from Kirk Herbstreit and Paul Feinbaum in that little montage is where we want to start the program this afternoon. And we have a lot of different places to go and a lot of different conversations to have. Bear with us if we're not into the one you're into right now. I will tell you this. I am certainly more than willing to move around the parts and the pieces that we have planned for this show. In other words, if you want to talk about something else than what we're other than what we're talking about right now, call. Just hit it. Hit us up. 866-240-1065, and we can certainly entertain your conversation. If you want to get into the battle at Madison Square Garden last night between Duke and Kansas and basketball action, number 7 Kansas taking down number 1 Duke, you know, that's fine, too. You have a lot of different places to go, but you just decide at 866-240-1065, kind of like what we do on Free for All Friday. I just don't want you to feel pigeonholed into the one subject that I'm most interested in right now. And that is college football, as they hook me and reel me in like so many of the rest of us. Okay, Kirk Herbstreit, you just heard this explanation from Kirk Herbstreit. Kushlin, was that from Mike and Mike this morning?
I believe so, yeah.
I believe it was, too. Okay, I just wanted to double-check to give a credit where it's due. You listen to Mike and Mike each and every morning right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So we just want to make sure that you that we acknowledge where that comes from. But what Kirk Herbstreit said in that audio clip there was that there's no way, essentially, there's no way that Ohio State, if they win out, can be kept out of the national championship hunt. If they win out and don't go, and that's the key here, of course, and don't even make it to the college, or excuse me, to the Big Ten championship game, they will still be a part of the college football Final Four. And the reason why, according to Herbie, is the committee has made them a very solid number two. So solid, in fact, that even if Penn State goes to the Big Ten Conference Championship game, which they would if Ohio State wins out and beats Michigan. If Penn State goes to the Big Ten Conference Championship game, and even if Penn State beats a top six ranked in the college football playoff, Wisconsin team in said conference championship game, Ohio State is not going to get dropped out from 2 down to 5 or lower in place of that conference champion, Penn State. Think about that for just a minute. What Herbie said this morning, and I'm not sure if I actually have this here.
If you're Ohio State, if they beat Michigan State, if they were able to beat Michigan at home, and even skip a Big Ten championship game, their resume alone, and with the way they're trending, the committee after the rankings putting them at a solid 2, kind of shows you that there's no way that they'll take Ohio State at a solid 2 and move them to 5 if Penn State, for example, becomes a Big Ten champion.
If Penn State becomes the Big Ten championship winner, Herbie says there's no way that Ohio State gets knocked out of this. That would mean that either A, there are 2 Big Ten teams in the Final Four for the first time since in the little brief now 3-year history of the college football 4-team playoff. Either there will be 2 teams from one conference in for the first time ever, and it would be Ohio State and Penn State, or they will have just declared that the regular season and conference championships mean nothing. Because there is no other way to describe what would be the situation if Ohio State didn't make it to the conference championship game, didn't even win that division of the conference, the East Division. If they lost the East Division of the conference to Penn State and lost to Penn State head-to-head and then was still elevated into the Final Four, with Penn State not being there, there's no other way to describe it than just patently unfair. There's no other way to describe it than just a complete miscarriage of justice. Now, even as I say that, I am not sitting here arguing that Penn State is better. I'm not saying Penn State is better than Ohio State. I'm saying they beat them. And it took 2 incredible special teams plays in the fourth quarter at Happy Valley on a whiteout night to get it done. A block punt and a block field goal played a huge role in that. But they beat them, and they would have won the conference, at least their half of it, and if they win the conference championship game against a very highly rated Wisconsin Badgers team, if they don't win the Big Ten's spot, if you will, and no conference, by the way, just to clarify, no conference is guaranteed a spot in the Final Four. Remember, there are 5 quote-unquote Power 5 conferences. There are only 4 spots in the Final Four, obviously. So nobody's guaranteed a spot. But if the Big Ten is kind of theoretically assured of a spot, if Ohio State were to get that spot over Penn State, how do we even justify having conference championship games? how do they even justify having crowning conference champions at all? If they can just bypass one for another because of the perception that the team that didn't win the conference is better. And the truth is, I do believe Ohio State is better. But I just can't justify giving the team that didn't even win their half of the division, or I'm sorry, their division of the conference, their half of the conference, and the team that did win it, beat them head-to-head, giving them their spot. I just have a very, very hard time with that. If you didn't watch the college football playoff ranking show last night, good for you. Neither did I. I told you. They're going to hook me from, in the context of talking about it, but they're not going to hook me and have me add to their ratings because I think it's ridiculous. I think it's all a show. It's all for money. But just for the purpose of what I do for a living here and talking sports with you, this is what they came up with. Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson. So Clemson drops from 2 to 4, but stays in. Michigan stayed at 3. Ohio State goes from 5 to 2, and Alabama, of course, is in their own league. Washington drops 2 to the outside looking in from 4 to 6. Louisville goes up 1 from 6 to 5, and they are 9-1 and just waiting for November 26th. For the winner, or excuse me, the loser of Ohio State, Michigan, is done. Their second loss knocks them out of the top 4, and then somebody elevates into it. Assuming, of course, nothing else crazy happens like another Clemson loss. But Louisville, you would think, would elevate, or Washington, the Pac-12 champion, if they don't lose another game, be very hard for Wisconsin to elevate there, you know, certainly after that. But then again, if they end up, and this is where we get into the ifs and whats and all the things that go along with it, Wisconsin and Penn State are 7 and 8, respectively. 7th and 8th. The winner of a theoretical Big Ten championship game between Penn State and Wisconsin would have a tough time convincing the voters, not the voters, beg pardon, the committee members, the 13 committee members, that they are one of the 4 best teams in America. But they would have the words Big Ten Conference Champions after their names. And how can we justify, if it's Penn State, having beaten Ohio State, Ohio State going in? Now, you can make a better case that if Wisconsin was to beat Penn State in such a theoretical situation, that Ohio State leapfrogged the Badgers into the Final Four, even though they didn't win their conference, simply because head-to-head they did beat the Wisconsin Badgers in their place in prime time at Camp Randall in overtime. You can make a better case for it there. But right now, the big question that a lot of people are asking is what happens if Ohio State wins out? That means they beat Michigan. The only way that Ohio State can, it's a very, very difficult situation for them. If Michigan, of course, beats Ohio State, now Michigan goes into the Big Ten championship game, and Penn State is essentially excluded from all conversation because Michigan hammered Penn State by 39, 49-10. So Ohio State is rendered moot because they have a second loss. Penn State is out because of what I just described. And then it's either Michigan or Wisconsin to win the Big Ten championship. Then we ask this question. If it's Wisconsin that beats Michigan in that theoretical matchup in the Big Ten championship game, they have 2 losses. Ohio State has 2 losses. Michigan has 2 losses. And Penn State has 2 losses. And now what does the committee do? Do they just then default to the eye test and say, which of those 4 teams is best? We're going to pick the best of them and put them in the playoff. Or do they say, well, 4 teams, all with 2 losses, let's pick the one that won the last game. That would be Wisconsin, even though Wisconsin lost to both Ohio State and Michigan. This is the conundrum that the 13-member committee faces based on where we are today. Now, as I said when I started the program, you know, I got a hook in my mouth, and I've been hooked into talking about this and trying to dissect this and measure what's most important versus what isn't. The truth of the matter is it doesn't matter at this point in time because this week's games will or could change everything. Ohio State has Michigan State in East Lansing. We know they're a much better team. They want to avenge last year's loss to Michigan State. That should be no problem. Of course, Michigan has Indiana. It should be no problem. The rest of the Big Ten is largely irrelevant at this point. I expect Penn State to win out because Penn State has Rutgers and then Michigan State. And then Wisconsin has, what is the rest of Wisconsin's schedule? Let me pull that up real quick. They have Purdue and Minnesota, so they should win out as well. Basically, everybody should win out in the Big Ten the rest of the way, with the exception of Michigan and Ohio State, who face one another in the finale. So that's when all of this will kind of sort itself out. To do anything more than what we're doing right now is kind of silly, but yet here we are doing it, and that is trying to project out what the committee is thinking about. So we're talking about, do conference championships matter when you dial 866-240-1065? Do conference championships matter at all, or should they, in your mind or in the committee's mind? Or should it just be the eye test? This is the team that I think is the best based on its resume, its victories, its quality losses, if you can use that term, quality losses. This is the best way that we can describe that. How do you feel about it? Let's go to it. Troy is in Bowling Green, and you are on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, my friend. Troy, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Great. Hey, I've heard a lot of conversations about the Penn State, Ohio State controversy. I'm not convinced that Michigan's going to go down to Indiana and just walk through there, especially with the quarterback change. Indiana's played a lot of stuff. And with that being said, my major point I wanted to make is it's possible Clemson and Alabama get beat in the championship game, then what do you do?
You mean in their conference championship games?
Yes.
Yeah, it is possible, but highly improbable, I think, truthfully. Why do you think that Alabama might lose the SEC championship game?
Well, I'm not saying that at all. I would not put any money on that. I'm just saying if that would happen, that would throw, who's going to let Alabama out then? You're probably going to...
Alabama's in. I think it's fair to say Alabama's in regardless. You know, they're such a solid number one that if they join the ranks of other one-loss teams, which would be basically everybody because there's nobody else undefeated in the country except for Western Michigan. But if they join the ranks of one-loss teams, there's no way they're not one of the top four one-loss teams in the country. So Alabama's got room to, margin for error here. Clemson, of course, does not. Clemson does not because, they're already a one-loss team, and if they lose their conference championship game, it would indeed be a second loss, and that would essentially eject them from the premises and open it up to some of the other possibles.
But then would you put Louisville in over the conference championship team? And the same thing with Alabama. You put them
That's the same. Well, I was going to compare it to the Big Ten. It's kind of similar to what I described in the Big Ten. Would you put Ohio State in, for example, in a theoretical situation over a conference champion Penn State team? Because Penn State, considering the fact that Penn State beat them, that's a very, very good question. And as we try to figure out the standings, and I'm trying to pull up now, what do the ACC standings look like? I'm trying to find that, if you can bear with me for just a second here. The ACC has Louisville and Clemson, of course, on the in the standings. They are 7-1, 6-1, respectively. In the coastal side, it's Va-Tech in North Carolina.
And I can tell you, by the way, Bob, Virginia Tech's already beaten Carolina, so they have the tiebreaker there. And then we know Clemson beat Louisville, so there's the tiebreaker there. So
is there any way, Jim Cushlin, the hokey that you are, is there any way that you see Virginia Tech beating either Louisville or Clemson in a and I guess it would have to be Clemson in a conference championship matchup?
At this point, not a chance. No. And I say that as a hokey.
Yeah, and I kind of think. I mean, you're asking a great question, Troy. Obviously, what would happen there? But I just don't see that happening. It would be really, throwing a monkey wrench into this whole thing. I don't see that happening there. And in the SEC, obviously, as we talked about Alabama, I just don't think it matters. Alabama is in no matter what. Now, the question would be, if Alabama remains in, do they join an SEC champion in there as well? And on the SEC East side, what is it? It's Florida right now that's in control, and Florida will win the SEC East. They got a two-game bulge there. If Alabama were to somehow lose to Florida, do they put a Florida team with two losses, 7-2, into the Final Four along with Alabama? I very seriously doubt it, and that would be very similar to the Penn State scenario.
And I think that's how Ohio State would get ousted, is if something like that happens, where Alabama would get knocked off. If Clemson loses, I think Clemson's out, and they would just put Louisville in and not worry about the ACC champion. But if you're talking about the SEC champion, that's a little bit different weight, I guess, in my opinion.
Well, I
don't think either one of those two conferences, if the favorite doesn't win the conference championship in the SEC and the ACC, and in the case I just described, it would be Florida or Virginia Tech, I don't think if either one of them wins their conference, they're going into the playoff. I just don't, which, again, begs the question I asked at the top of all of this, do conference championships matter? if you are a two-loss conference champion and there is somebody that is deemed to be way better than you that doesn't win their conference, then, you know, then that team that doesn't win the conference is probably going to get the nod if they're highly ranked by the committee. And I don't think anybody is going to look at Florida and say, hey, they might have won the conference championship game. That makes them better than Alabama. Nobody's going to say that. They're going to say Alabama's still way better, and Alabama will get that spot. The difference between that and the SEC, or the Big Ten, of course, is that in that scenario we've been describing, Ohio State can't claim superior status to the conference champion if it's Penn State because of Penn State's head-to-head win. And that's what throws this whole entire thing into a tizzy.
It's gonna take out somehow Ohio State or an Alabama, somebody to get left out, and that'll make the movement to eight come faster than.
Well, it might not even take that. It might just take, you know, yet another conference champion from another conference that didn't do anything wrong. Like, let's say Washington, if they win the Pac-12. And they have one loss, and they are left out because, you know, say a second team from another conference gets in, then that's going to be enough of a rallying cry, I think, for them to say, okay, we really have to tweak this. We have to make sure that all five Power Conference champions are in, and then we'll have three at-large bids to play with in every year when in our new eight-team format. That's what it might not take a team getting screwed out of somewhere like the Big Ten or the SEC. It just might even take one of the other Power Conferences. You know, in the past couple of years, it's been all about, you know, hey, the Big 12 doesn't get a representative. Why? Well, they didn't even have a conference championship game. All right, well, then that's fair. But once a team that does, that is part of the Power 5, they don't have a conference championship. And Troy, I got to run, buddy. Thanks for the call. I'm going to get some other people on the radio. But once a team that is part of the Power 5 and has a conference title game and is a one-loss team matching all of the others gets left out in the cold, that is when the rallying cry will start saying we have to have eight teams. Let's go to Toledo and say good afternoon to Jeff right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good, Bob. How are you doing, buddy?
My head's spinning, man. Every time I think I have a grasp of this, there's another element that somebody throws into it, and you say, oh, yeah, forgot about that, too.
I think you're overthinking everything, but then again, that might be what gets the ratings, right?
Well, that's, you know, that's our job is to overthink this stuff, I guess. Like I said, they
absolutely
just hook us in and they make us talk about this. We kind of have to.
You and I could have a discussion on this for about an hour, but, you know, I think less is more. So
okay. Which
question do you want me to entertain first? You want to do the conference championship question first?
Do the first thing that I asked everybody is, do or should conference championships matter when it comes to picking these final four teams?
They do somewhat, probably not to the degree that people have been led to believe, primarily Ohio State fans, because of what happened the first year. So I think people were putting too much emphasis on the conference championship because of what took place in the initial year of the playoffs. Should they? Yes, they should, for both reasons. They should help get somebody in. They should also help eliminate somebody. The conference championships by themselves are eventually going to lead us to the 18 playoff system. Because I think eventually, and it might happen this year based on what's happening with the rankings, they are going to probably get to the point where they take the conference champions automatically, and then three more outside teams.
Yeah, three at-large teams. And then it's going to be a battle of which second-place team in a Power 5 conference deserves those final three spots in an eight-team perceived playoff. And then what the problem you get after that is, again, are we limiting it to just Power 5 conferences, their champions, and their second-place teams making the final?
I don't know. I don't think
because
you would.
If you do get an undefeated MAC champion like there could be this year with a Western Michigan.
I honestly believe, well, first of all, I'm going to tell you that in my personal opinion and also from some of the people that I've talked to that are indirectly involved, there's a lot more going into the eye test, number one. And what the public doesn't understand is travelability really does influence what's happening in that room. And that's why you're going to always see an emphasis towards a team like Ohio State. Because in the long run, it really does all come down to money. It's not just about, it really isn't about finding the best team to win a championship game for the committee and or for the NCAA. For them, it's still about profit. And so.
But to that end, let me interrupt that thought, Jeff. To that end, I don't think travel is important as getting the four teams to give you the two best games in the semis to drive the rating through the roof to the point where they can cash in with the networks. This is
Let me go ahead and be the devil's advocate.
Hold on. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Because as I look at the top contending teams, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, and I'm going to skip over Louisville a little bit here and go to Washington and Penn State and Wisconsin and Oklahoma, I just have a hard time believing that if they're in the conference, or excuse me, the college football playoffs, the national semifinals, that they won't travel like a mother, just like they went from Ohio State to be there. The only one that I think might be a little less is just Louisville, because they have traditionally been more a more basketball than a football school. But I think
Wisconsin,
all travel like crazy.
Wisconsin travels very well, not as well as Ohio State, and they travel much better than Penn State. Now, there would be some argument with the whole Penn State issue, because back when during the Joe Pod days, before the whole scandal, Penn State was kind of like Pittsburgh and kind of like Oakland. You had national notoriety. So they could get away with seemingly travel well because you had a lot of "we are Penn State" fans across the United States.
And I think you still have that. I do. And, in fact, I think if you looked at that whiteout game, just for an example, when they're on prime time, the national spotlight, 100,000 people filling that stadium there in Happy Valley, I feel like they see this as their revival, if you will, after the scandal.
Absolutely.
Look what we did. And we did it in a relatively short period of time.
Absolutely.
We went from probation and being, you know, the embarrassment and all the rest, to the statue of Joe Pa being taken down, to the depths of shame. And look where we are now, fighting in the national semifinals. I think they would travel like crazy to be
honest. I want to throw this out at you, because I know you're going to cut me short here in a minute. And I want to make sure that I get this out so you have some things to think about as you continue these discussions. Just like they took into consideration with Ohio State when they had the third string quarterback in there, and they gave them an opportunity to prove themselves and then relied on the defense and the running back, you have to take into consideration all the teams currently alive that are being ranked, and are they healthy, and their quality wins or quality losses, were they healthy? So my point being, number one, the rankings that just came out are important. Everybody keeps saying the only one that's important is the last one. That's not true. The reason it's important is
because that's what the
year,
committee says. The committee says they start with a blank slate each week, so this week's ranking should mean nothing come next Tuesday.
And you and I know that's crap.
But that's what they say.
Absolutely. And the reason we know it's hypocritical is because the reason Ohio State is number two is because of all the conundrums that could happen. And so they need to have them that high. And also, if you really dissect the top 12, that's why you've got Penn State, Oklahoma, Wisconsin in certain spots, because they can then justify down the road, if per se Penn State wins the conference, which I don't think they will, and I'll explain real quick why.
I don't have time for that explanation. I've got to get some other people. Just make your last point real quick.
You got to take a look at all the injuries. Michigan beat Penn State when they were missing four starting defensive players. Penn State currently is missing three starting offensive linemen. That does play into it, just as well as some of the other teams. Michigan with another quarterback. It's going to be a big test for them this week against Indiana. So those injury-laden, for instance, Washington beat Stanford. But when they beat Stanford, Stanford was missing five starters. That's why it's not as big a quality to win as it should be.
I'm going to respectfully disagree, Jeff, and thanks for the call. Let me get some other people on the air. I'm going to respectfully disagree because I don't think the committee cares. Because this isn't evaluating which teams have the best starters. This is who are the best teams, and you know what that means? They're 85 scholarships deep, all of them. Who has the best depth? Who can overcome the loss of their quarterback like Ohio State did 2 years ago? Who can overcome the loss of a couple of starting offensive linemen or a stud shutdown corner? Who's got the next man up mentality? I don't think they're sitting in the room as a committee and saying, you know, they did that with three offensive linemen out. And when do they come back, those guys? And how much better will they be when they come back? I don't think they do that. And I could be wrong, but I'm not in the room, and you're not either. I just don't think they do. They're evaluating the best teams, and that includes depth, not just their starters. Andy in Toledo, let me get you in here before we get a timeout. Yeah. Andy, go ahead. You're on here.
How's it going?
Good, buddy.
I was just bringing up the question of the eight teams, and it should have been eight teams from the beginning when we started this whole playoff.
Indeed.
And the last year was a big drawing point for it, and this year is going to be even bigger drawing point. And, well, I guess I want to just get to the point of, say Ohio State goes into Michigan and beats them by 50 points or 35 points.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State beats Wisconsin by 25 points. Why couldn't you put Ohio State and Penn State in there at the same time?
Well, you could.
A two and a four position.
You could. And that's one of the conundrums here. But the question people would ask is Penn State one of the four best teams just because they won the conference? If you look at just, all of the contenders, if you look at, at Alabama and Clemson and Louisville and so on and so forth, are they one of the four? Does the Big Ten deserve two teams? Ohio State, if they beat Michigan by 35? Or something like you just described, it's clear they're not dropping from their number two spot. They will be entrenched there. Then the question is can the committee look at, the Big 12 two-loss champion Oklahoma and say, sorry, we're going with Penn State, a second team from the Big Ten? Can they look at Washington, sitting out there with one loss in the Pac-12 champion and say, sorry, you don't get a Pac-12 championship representation here. We're going with two Big Ten teams. That's going to be a very hard sell for some of the other conferences if a two-loss Penn State team joins, an impressive win over Michigan having Ohio State team in the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, but you could put both of them in there with the argument of, they lost to Pitt in game four, I believe, is what it was, three or four in the non-conference games by 3 points, and then they lose to Michigan handedly injuries, with being injured all across the board. And then you have a Louisville team who doesn't need to be in the top four. They lost to Clemson. There's no reason for them to even be in the discussion to be in the top four. I mean, Clemson lost.
I don't know. I would disagree with you. I would disagree with you, because you know what I see? This is one of those things where now we get down to resume and win, quality wins, like you were just running down explaining Penn State's losses and evaluating how big somebody else's wins were, versus the eye test. And when I watch Louisville play, I'll be honest with you, I would favor them in a neutral site game against Penn State. I think Louisville would beat Penn State. I don't think Penn State's fast enough to handle Lamar Jackson in Louisville, to be quite honest with you. So I don't think it's as clear cut as saying, well, they don't have any quality wins or not many quality wins, and their loss to Clemson disqualifies them. They shouldn't even be in the top four discussion. I disagree. I think the eye test part really plays a role here beyond just the resume part. And when I watch that team play, they play at an octane level. Even in defeat at Clemson, for crying out loud, they played at an extraordinarily high level, high speed, fast pace, the kind that runs most teams off the field. And I think they would be favored, at least I would favor them over Penn State in a hypothetical matchup.
Louisville's going to have the Heisman winner. There's no question about it. I mean, the guy's outstanding. The quarterback's outstanding.
Oh, he is, and they are. Like I said, they play at an incredible speed. Hey, Andy, I got to run, my friend. I apologize for cutting it short, but I do have to do so. We got to get a sports center. We're going to come in and talk a little bit about this from the Michigan perspective. Anthony Broom from maizeandbrew.com is waiting in the wings. We'll see what he thinks about his Wolverines' chances without Wilton Spade, if that's what it comes down to, for the Final Two and a potential conference championship game. All of that coming up right here on The Ticket.
France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 3:47 rolling onward. More college football discussion after the committee got together last night and had a little show and said, okay, those losses that Clemson and Michigan suffered, no biggie. You're still in the top four. But by the way, Ohio State are rolling. They jump up and take Washington's spot in the Final Four. Although technically they did much better than that. Washington had been four before their loss, dropping out after the loss to USC. OSU goes from five up to number two. Here to make some sense out of it for us from a Michigan perspective, Anthony Broom from maizeandbrew.com. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing well. I don't know how much sense I can make out of it. Seems like the criteria changes every week, but we'll do our best here.
Well, all right, so let's just start with your initial reaction. Were you surprised that Michigan, suffering a loss to unranked Iowa, that's big, by the way, that they did not lose any ground in terms of the committee's eyes? They still seem very impressed by the three quality wins over top 10 playoff teams that they have. And, of course, Wisconsin, Penn State, and number 10, Colorado.
Yeah, I thought after that loss they would probably, since it was such a crazy weekend in college football, I thought maybe they'd slide back to four or five, just because a lot of teams in the mix lost. So I didn't see them sliding back too much to stay at three. I was a little bit surprised by that, not overly surprised, but like you just alluded to, the three top 10 wins, over Penn State, over Colorado, over Wisconsin. That was, they're kind of putting a little more weight on that than they are with the, you know, what looks like a bad loss over the weekend. So
essentially, that's what kind of, I'm sorry, I thought you were finished. Go ahead, Anthony, finish your thought.
No, I mean, I think they're just kind of weighing that more, those three top 10 wins over, over everything else right now and everyone else. You know, I think that, I think that's what their thought process is there.
Okay, so are they essentially just setting it up this way, saying, you know what, winner of Ohio State, Michigan, you're in, no matter what. Winner of Ohio State, Michigan, you're in. Loser, you're done. That's what it's going to come down to here, because we all know that Ohio State is not going to make it if they beat Michigan to the Big Ten championship game. Penn State is going to be there, but the committee in putting them up at number two, Kirk Herbstreit, among others, said means that they're saying you're going to stay there. Even if Penn State is the Big Ten champion, you're going to, and they beat you, you're going to stay up into this in this top four.
Yeah, I think that all season long I kind of felt like, you know, no matter where Michigan and Ohio State have been in the rankings, it's always kind of felt like, you know, if Ohio State was two and Michigan was three, it's more, you know, a 2A and 2B type scenario. That game has always kind of been the playoff to the playoff, and it seems, assuming both teams take care of business this weekend like we would think they would, Ohio State playing at Michigan State, Indiana coming up to Ann Arbor to play the Wolverines. You'd think the two teams take care of business there. Yeah, it all sets up for, you know, the last game of the year being one of the most important in the national title picture. And I think that's kind of that's what they're setting up here. You know, if you're a team like Michigan, if you go out, and you beat Ohio State, because they're the only team in this whole picture here that kind of controls their own destiny. Outside of Alabama, you know, you go out and beat Ohio State next weekend. You play Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game, beat them. Well, there's two more top 10 wins right there. So, you know, at that point, they're in control of their own destiny, and, you know, whoever wins that game deserves to be in. Whether Ohio State wins it and doesn't get into the Big Ten title game, I think the eyeball test would show that they're one of the best four teams in the country.
So Anthony Broom joins us from maizeandbrew.com, a Michigan fan site. So I'm going to ask you the same question I'm asking my callers earlier on. How important are or should conference championships be to the committee? And let me ask it with this little caveat. Apparently not very, when you consider the fact that there are five Power Five conferences, obviously, hence the name Power Five, and only four teams get in anyway. So every year under the current format, at least one conference is going to go without a conference champion being represented in the Final Four. So is that just what we are to take from this, that conference championships just don't matter? It's whoever they think are the four best teams after conference championship weekend, regardless of the outcome?
Yeah, you know, in that regard, it just kind of feels like the BCS plus two, because at the end of the day, the four teams that they can justify putting in there, whether that be because of their resume, because of, let's face it, there's kind of a brand bias there too. If they can justify you being in that top four, they'll put you in there, whether you're the conference champion or not. So I think it does kind of dilute the fact, you know, that it seems like one week they'll put a little more emphasis into conference championships than they would another, but it does kind of dilute that. If you have a team like Ohio State sitting at number two, for example, this year, they don't control their own destiny. If they beat Michigan, they're not going to Indianapolis, but you would assume they'll still be in the title games or in the college football playoffs. Right. So, their criteria seems to change week to week, but I think that's the message that was sent last night loud and clear.
Are all conferences treated equally? And what I mean by that is the scenario we just described. How could they justify, and this is just one of those goofy things, in the Big Ten, let's suppose Ohio State beats Michigan, and Penn State thus gets the Eastern Conference or the Eastern Division championship of the Big Ten Conference, and beats a Wisconsin, another top 10 CFB, College Football Playoff Committee team, in the conference championship game. Could they and would they keep Ohio State in the Final Four instead of Penn State, the conference champion? And if so, and this is to my point about different conferences being treated equally, in a similar situation, for example, in the SEC, let's say Alabama were to lose in the SEC championship game to Florida. I know not likely, but I have to believe that one loss Alabama is still going to get the bid in the Final Four over that conference champion, Florida, in a hypothetical situation like that.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, if in that scenario, if Alabama was to lose, they probably slide to, what, maybe 3 or 4, unless it was, you know, an embarrassing loss, which we don't see. Those just don't happen under Nick Saban. So, I don't know. Penn State's, that's going to be an interesting one, because that's another case where, yeah, they've played better in conference, but they still have, you know, they still have the loss to Pitt, from earlier in the season. You know, crazy things happen, led them to, winning that game against Ohio State. So I don't know if the committee looks at fluke endings or, you know, like I said, it seems like their thought process is very fluid. So, I think at the end of the day, they're going to put in the 4 best teams that they can justify being there, whether it's, a 1-loss Ohio State, that doesn't make the Big Ten title game or what have you. So it's very, I mean, every week it seems like there's something different that comes out of there, and it's something that it's always something to talk about.
Let's focus on the Wolverines, of course, that you cover now for AmazingBrew.com. Is Michigan one of the 4 best teams in the country if it's John O'Korn at quarterback? No disrespect to him, but obviously he hasn't played all season. It's been Wilton Spate. Are they one of the 4 best teams? And then specifically, can they beat Ohio State, which seems to be now clicking on all cylinders, on the road at the Horseshoe in 2 weeks on the 26th with their second quarterback?
Well, I'm getting a real Michigan State going into Columbus vibe for how this team is going to have to get it done. You know, if Michigan's going to go down to Columbus with their backup quarterback, they're going to have to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football. That's something they weren't able to do against Iowa. They kind of got pushed around a little bit for really, I mean, there have been times where it's happened this year, but really for the first time this season, it happened for 60 minutes and it led to a loss. You know, Ohio State had its early season struggles a little bit. It seems like, I think I was on your show back in August. We said, you know, Ohio State and November is going to be very different than what Ohio State is in September or October.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, you did. We both did. I remember talking about how it's going to take those first-time starters, you know, replacing all of those lost seniors at Ohio State, time to gel. And indeed, well, it's weird because they actually didn't take time. They started out very strong in September, then had that 4-game kind of lull that included the loss to Penn State in October, and now they're back up to speed and then some here in the month of November.
Yeah, so when it comes down to the handing the baton from Wilton Spate to John O'Korn, yeah, I take their words at face value when they say that battle in camp truly was neck and neck going up right until, you know, the last couple of days of training camp. So I think that, I think the team believes in John O'Korn to get the job done. I think what he brings to, that offense is a little bit different. That might be what the doctor ordered here a little bit is I think he's a little more mobile than Wilton Spate.
Okay.
Now Spate has showed that, you know, he's kind of got the Ben Roethlisberger-esque type of escapability where he feels out pressure. John O'Korn is mobile.
He can shake some of it off, too. That's the other thing. Wilton Spate seems to be the kind of guy who's harder to bring down. That's a very Roethlisberger-like quality.
Yeah, so I think that John O'Korn is certainly mobile. I don't know if he's got that trait to him, but I think he's a guy where, yeah, you might be able to call some designed runs for him. I think you might be able to pick up a few yards with your legs. He has a bigger arm. I think the opportunity to, we'll see. We'll see on Indiana. I'm sure they'll be airing it out a little bit, trying to get him some confidence going into Columbus, assuming that Spate maybe comes back versus Ohio State. The reports are still out there that it may not be a season ender. Nobody really knows right now. So I think that, I think he has the ability to go down and win a game like that.
How does the road factor, factor into this, Anthony Broom from AmazingBrew.com. Time for just one more question here, because the biggest games that Michigan has played this year have all been at home. They got Penn State at home. They got Wisconsin at home. They got Colorado at home, their 3 biggest wins that we had previously discussed. The toughest game they had on the road was Iowa, and they lost. So now you're talking about at the Horseshoe. Even with Wilton Spate, they haven't shown they can win on the road in a very, very tough place to play. Yet, even the Michigan State one, I kind of don't qualify as that, because Michigan State, despite being a rivalry game, they're just having such a down year. You know, the at Iowa game was their toughest one, and they lost it. So, how do you get a sense that even with Welton Spate, they're going to win their first big, big game on the road at the Horseshoe, and then let alone now that it's going to be with John O'Korn.
Well, all I can say is, I still have no idea what to expect out of that game. Haven't since, since spring football. I know I think even without Spate, they have the guys to do it. I think defense travels. I think, aside from, they had some problems stopping the run against Iowa, but the defense, for the most part, held them in check. Like I said before, they're going to have to go down there. The offensive line is going to have to be far better than it has been. They're going to have to go down there and kind of smack the Buckeyes around a little bit. You saw what last year with Michigan State kind of went down there and did that. And I know there were some other factors in the result of that game, but, if they're going to win that game, they're going to have to be the hammer and not the nail. And I think that they have the players to do it. I certainly think they have the coaching staff that will have them ready. Will they win the game? I don't know, but, it's do or die time. If you want to go to Indy, which is, first and foremost, that's the goal in front of them. They want to go to Indianapolis. They want to play for a Big Ten title. Cause if you do that, you take care of business there, you'll be in the playoff. But, it's setting up to be, a rivalry game, throw the records out the door, throw what we know about the teams out the door. It's setting up to be something pretty special that we haven't seen in a while. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too, Anthony. I know everybody up there in Michigan is going to be looking forward to it. And certainly everybody in Columbus can't wait for this showdown to happen. They have dominated the Wolverines, and now they're all smelling playoff blood at the same time. And the Wolverines going with another quarterback. Anthony Broom, MazeandBrew.com, trying to break it down for us and making some sense out of the playoff rankings and the possibilities. We'll know for sure in a couple of weeks after that November 26th matchup. Thanks so much, Anthony. We appreciate the time, my friend. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks for having me.
You got it, buddy. Thank you. All right, let's get a time out here at the top of the hour. On the other side, we're going to crown and say congratulations to our KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. We're going to get right back into your phone calls up at 4:35 or so, the final half hour of the program. We're going to stay on college football, but a different kind, because we're going to get into the MAC, and we're going to talk about the Rockets and Ball State with a matchup tonight at the Glass Bowl. So we'll have UT head coach Jason Candle on with us to talk about that matchup. By the way, congratulations to Kent State and Coach Mike Jinks. After 1, 2, 3, 4, or excuse me, Kent State. They beat Kent State. Beg your pardon. BG. And Coach Mike Jinks, after 2, 4, 6, 7 losses, I think, in a row, and a season that was kind of really, really rough to deal with, they have not quit. They won their second straight yesterday against Kent State after beating Akron the week before. So congratulations to them. But we will stay in the MAC and talk MAC football with Coach Candle from UT coming up at 4:35. Your phone calls after the Sports Center, which is coming up now right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Inside, bounded to the Friesen. Toss to Fry. Fire.
Yes!
Kyrie Irving from 25. Perfect for Friesen. Kyrie inside. Double clutches. Spins it out. Now a chance to tie or take the lead. Corner. Kyrie for the lead. Stubborn! He rubber rimmed it. DeRozan between the legs. Rhythms in. Money.
Wayne Casey. Oh, technical foul.
That went into the crowd. Absolutely. Lowry off his own foot. You can't do it. Once it goes into the crowd, it's a tech. Fry pops. Takes his time. Fires. Got it! He's unbelievable!
Kevin Love came to the ball. Over top, LeBron James drawn up beautifully by Tyler.
And that'll do it. A one and go with playoff-type intensity.
If you look at Ohio State, if they beat Michigan State, if they were able to beat Michigan at home, and even skip a Big Ten championship game, their resume alone and with the way they're trending, the committee after the rankings putting them at a solid 2 kind of shows you that there's no way that they'll take Ohio State at a solid 2 and move them to 5 if Penn State, for example, becomes a Big Ten champion. So Ohio State, even though they don't control their own destiny to get to Indianapolis, in my opinion, based on what we see from the committee, they do control their own destiny to get into the playoff if they beat Michigan State and Michigan. You cannot build a case for Louisville on their resume.
I was really glad to see Ohio State number 2, because I think Ohio State is in another league outside of Alabama's universe. Assuming Ohio State beats Michigan, and I frankly think they will after what I saw from Michigan the other night in Iowa, I move them off as well. I don't think we have to debate Ohio State versus the Big Ten championship. I do think the Big Ten is the best conference in college football this year. year. I don't think there is an argument about that. So I believe that if it's Penn State and Wisconsin, for the sake of argument, in the Big Ten championship game, I would take the winner of that game. I think they would have proven enough, particularly Penn State, having beaten Ohio State.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Tell you what, it's a fascinating discussion. It really, really is. Even though it annoys me that we have to have it. You know, Mike and Mike this morning were talking about whether or not this is good for the game that we are discussing this in the depth that we are and that they were, or if it's bad. And I think the agreement on the set, excuse me, there at ESPN, was that this is good for them. This is good for them because it gives them a ton to talk about. But it might not necessarily be the best thing for the game. That we really, really, you know, are speculating on things that have yet to happen and trying to peek into the minds of committee members that don't want to tell you what's in their minds. And then use that to speculate as to what might happen later on. And it's just, you know, it's so much nonsense because we're all just guessing. But it is a fascinating guessing game, isn't it? And, you know, what you just heard there from Kirk Herbstreit saying, there's no way that the committee could choose Penn State over Ohio State if Ohio State wins out and is sitting there with one loss, even though Penn State beat them, because the eye test tells you they're better. That's why he believes they put them at a strong number two. And that after they pound on Michigan State this weekend, they'll stay a strong number two behind Alabama. And then if the theory holds true that they beat Michigan, there they are. They're going to be number two, and there's nothing that's going to drop them down from 2 to 5 without losing another game, which they won't have a chance to do because they don't make the conference championship game. So you got Herbstreit saying that there's no way Ohio State would really be leapfrogged by Penn State into the playoffs, even if Penn State wins the conference. Then you have Paul Feinbaum there at the end essentially saying the exact opposite, that the winner of conference championship game in the Big Ten, that the winner of that game, whether it be Wisconsin or Penn State in that scenario, should be the representative in the playoffs. Let me see if I have that part again here.
And Michigan, you cannot build a case for Louisville on their resume.
I was really glad to see Ohio State number two because I think Ohio State is in another league outside of Alabama's universe. Assuming Ohio State beats Michigan, and I frankly think they will after what I saw from Michigan the other night in Iowa, I move them off as well. I don't think we have to debate Ohio State versus the Big Ten championship. I do think the Big Ten is the best conference in college football this year. I don't think there is an argument about that. So I believe that if it's Penn State and Wisconsin, for the sake of argument, in the Big Ten championship game, I would take the winner of that game. I think they would have proven enough, particularly Penn State, having beaten Ohio State.
So he's essentially saying two teams. There should be two in the Final Four from the Big Ten. He says Ohio State certainly has proven it, and if they beat Michigan, which he thinks they will, they would certainly get to stay in, as I described. There's no way they're going to fall from 2 to 5 without losing or even playing again after the Michigan finale. But he thinks that the winner of Penn State and Wisconsin gets in as well. I don't know how I feel about that. I like the idea because, as I've said for so long, I think the Big Ten is the best team in the conference, which Paul Feinbaum agrees with now. And that's strange given his SEC leanings through the years with ESPN. So I agree, and I like the idea of the Big Ten getting that kind of respect. But I don't know how I feel about that as I look at the rankings and look at the possibilities. Is it fair to put a two-loss Big Ten champion like Wisconsin or Penn State into the Final Four over, for example, a two-loss Big 12 champion like Oklahoma? Again, assuming that Oklahoma finishes and takes care of their business and finish 10-2 without a conference championship game, is it fair to put that two-loss team, Wisconsin or Penn State, in a second team from the Big Ten over a Pac-12 champion like Washington? If they have just the one loss, or goodness gracious, even if they have two, how do we rate which team's two losses are weaker or worse, or however you want to phrase that? Is it fair to take two Big Ten teams, like a two-loss Wisconsin or Penn State, to team with Ohio State instead of a Louisville, who probably is going to finish with one loss but not be able to win the ACC because of the loss to Clemson? How come Clemson and Louisville don't get the two of the four spots in such a hypothetical scenario? I'm not sure how I feel about Feinbaum's suggestion there that there should be two teams in that scenario, one being Ohio State, the other being Penn State or Wisconsin in the Final Four. Cush, you've been noticeable by your absence in this conversation today, partly because we had a lot of callers and a lot of guests, but are you happy with what you heard from Feinbaum? Would you agree that it should be Buckeyes in the two spot. Essentially, it would be Alabama, Ohio State, somebody, and then the Penn State Wisconsin Big Ten championship game winner. Would you be okay with that?
I mean, the only reason that I would be okay with that is the part that even the Paul Feinbaums are admitting, that the Big Ten is the best conference.
Before you continue, just to throw a little monkey wrench into
sure.
that. We have all agreed that for the past few years, the SEC was the best conference.
Right.
And yet we freaked at the notion that they would put a non-conference champion in there with Alabama as among the top four. We called it what? SEC bias.
Yep.
ESPN and college football's SEC bias. They're perceived to be so much better. How can you take a non-conference champion from the SEC as part of the Final Four and not a conference champion from one of those other Power Five conferences? We've always said that. So to be fair, can we up here in Big Ten country, can we play that game and be that hypocritical and say, hey, Big Ten's best team, best conference, so therefore two of the teams can make it?
Yeah, and you do bring up a very good point, because we did more or less say those kind of things over the course of the last 2 years. Of course, on some level, it was a little bit more straightforward these first 2 years, because you remember all eight teams, 4 1 year, 4 the next year, all happened to be conference champions, and it more or less worked out okay. I remember in the first year, the conference left out was the Big 12, and those guys finished 5 and 6. I think that was Baylor at TCU.
Yeah, correct.
And then last year, if I'm not mistaken, it was the Pac-12 team that was kind of left out of this thing. That's what's going to be interesting about this. It's not so much that it's the Big Ten, and of course, that does put a little bit of a smile on our faces, because it is the Big Ten in question here, but it really comes back to something we've been saying these last couple of days. How much weight on the final rankings are these committee members going to put on conference championships? Because the thing that throws a wrench into it is if Ohio State beats Michigan after taking care of Michigan State to finish with just the one loss. Clearly, if Michigan wins, a lot of what we're talking about is out the door, because then Michigan would end up in the big title game and most likely be the favorite. And then you're in a scenario where the Big Ten probably would only get the one team, Michigan, in that case.
Well, hold on. You just uncovered another element to this conversation. Let's suppose Michigan beats Ohio State.
Right.
And goes to the Big Ten championship game.
Because they would if they beat Ohio State.
Of course. And so they would be in the Big Ten championship game. One loss. Third ranked right now in the college football playoff rankings. But and of course, the win in the conference championship game makes all this null and void. They are the Big Ten's representative in the playoff. And
right.
Then they're going to find the other three someplace else. Nobody else will have proven to be deserving
right.
of that. But what if they go to that conference championship game, play a rematch with Wisconsin, and lose? Are we just putting two-loss Wisconsin into the playoff because they are the Big Ten Conference champion, having avenged now a loss earlier this season at Michigan, against the Wolverines? Or do you think that there's a possibility, as I said yesterday, it sounds insane, and listen to how insane this whole conversation is. Then again, this is why I love sports talk, because it just gets this goofy sometimes. We're going right now, Jim, from talking 2 seconds ago about two Big Ten teams in the Final Four to the unthinkable. Does the Big Ten get bumped out of the Final Four altogether? Would the committee look at a two-loss Wisconsin Big Ten championship team and say they're not as good as the one-loss Louisville team and the one-loss Clemson team that is the ACC champion, or they're not as good as the two-loss Oklahoma team from the Pac that is also a conference champion from the Big 12 or from Washington? In other words, it's entirely plausible that we could have two Big Ten teams in the Final Four, and we could have zero Big Ten teams in the Final Four, all depending on what Michigan does against Ohio State and then in the conference championship game.
Now, that's another interesting wrinkle that you bring up, and I don't think that would happen, the zero Big Ten teams. And, of course, again, in that scenario, that's Michigan beating Ohio State, but then Michigan losing to Wisconsin in a Big Ten title game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wisconsin would get in over the Big 12, I believe, in that scenario.
Why?
And that's simply because of, Because I think the Big Ten is stronger than the Big 12. Wouldn't that have to come to play if you're talking about a two-loss Oklahoma and a two-loss Wisconsin?
I don't know, because again, this
they both
is when
be
you
conference
get to the,
champions. How do you decide? I would hope.
This is when you get into the subjective eye test,
yep.
which is a part of the equation.
You're
and
right.
All of the committee members have acknowledged. We look at big wins. We look at losses and see what their impact is. We look at a strength of schedule and overall resume, and we have an eye test,
yeah.
which is why Louisville, which does not have a strong resume, is sitting there at number five waiting to break into the top four. They have no resume. I mean, they have that 63-20 shellacking of Florida State, and then they got a bunch of other kind of cupcakes that they've pounded, and including some teams that they didn't pound as really as hard as they probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the eye test saying, you know, yeah. I see them playing at their breakneck speed that they play. There are very few teams that can run with them in this country, and therefore the eye test tells me they got to be part of my Final Four. Now I'm speaking of an anonymous or,
yeah.
you know, what's the word I'm looking for, generic college football playoff committee member.
No, and again, these are all good points, and what's so fascinating about it is no matter which avenue and hypothetical we're trying to play out here, boy, it feels like the real answer to every single one of these scenarios is eight teams.
Yeah,
seriously.
Exactly.
That's why I'm loving how this is starting to develop. You know, even no matter what the people in charge of the playoff and the conference commissioners, and we're going to go through the whole thing. Remember, this is year three, so we've now cycled through all the bowls. We'll have acted as a semifinal once after this season is completed. And I've always said, Bob, it's when, not if. But boy, if all these hypotheticals can keep being played out and debated, and it keeps going along the way it might be going right now, I just hope it really accelerates this conversation. Because they, deep down, mics off and all that kind of stuff behind closed doors, they have to know that a majority of the public is clamoring for this to be expanded to eight. They have
yeah,
to
they
know
are.
That,
they
don't
are.
They?
And you know what, Jim? I don't disagree. And obviously, I have spent many, many, combined many hours on this program talking about, you know, the need for eight and expanding this thing. And there will be many, many more hours to come on this program and others in which we discuss that and argue for that. But I'm just trying to stay in the moment.
Okay.
Just trying to stay involved in this year. And again, they've got us, you know, right where they want us. They've got us, you know, pinned here in trying to figure this whole thing out. And maybe that's their goal here, is to kind of create this chaos so that we continue to talk about it and analyze it and overthink it. I think one of our guests, maybe it was Anthony Broom earlier, said, let's not overthink this. But we are overthinking this, and it's kind of part of what we have to do, that there could be two Big Ten teams in the Final Four, and there could be zero. And that's just the bottom line is, if I am a voter or a committee member, you know, looking at this thing when it's all said and done, hypothetically playing this out now, and I'm looking at an Oklahoma team that will have finished the season on, I want to say, a 9-game winning streak. Oklahoma, and by the way, there's another story there out of Oklahoma that we haven't talked about.
And incidentally, before you start that, Oklahoma, to do what you're about to say they're going to do would involve them having to beat the two other decent teams in the Big 12 in succession at West Virginia and Oklahoma State to finish it off.
That's my point. That's exactly my point. Because, you know, you just said, well, the Big Ten's better, so therefore the Big Ten champion, Wisconsin, in this hypothetical head-to-head for a spot with Oklahoma, I don't know that I can say that, especially when here's what the committee will see. The committee will see Oklahoma with back-to-back losses in the middle of the season against the other two best teams in the conference, the two best teams in the East, Michigan and Ohio State, and then wins over Iowa, unranked, Nebraska, number 7, that's impressive, Northwestern unranked, Illinois unranked, Purdue unranked, and Minnesota unranked. Comparing that to a two-loss Big 12 champion, Oklahoma, who will have finished the season after their loss to, where did they go now? Hold on, I lost it. Looking at Oklahoma's loss to Ohio State. Since the Ohio State loss
at home. Yeah, they lost at Houston to open the season and the Ohio State game.
So since their second loss, they will have beaten 21st-ranked TCU, unranked Texas, unranked Kansas State, unranked Texas Tech, unranked Kansas, unranked Iowa State, unranked Baylor, but then 14th-ranked West Virginia and 11th-ranked Ohio State or Oklahoma State in a rivalry game, bedlam game. So if they beat two top 15 teams in a row to finish the season, compared to the final teams that I just ranked, read off to you from Wisconsin, unranked, eye test wise and schedule wise, I think that committee very well could say, Baker Mayfield, come on down. You guys have qualified.
An
incredible storming back from the loss to the Buckeyes. You are a Big 12 conference champion, and you are one of the Final Four in Big 10. Sorry about your luck, but you had a weak conference championship game winner.
Yeah, and that could be one of the things they do, which I think would be the most interesting of all the possible scenarios, because what's been one of the themes of this whole college football season? Big 12 weak, Big 10 may be the strongest. So I still put a low percentage on that happening, but it's not zero. And that, I think, is the key of what we're both trying to get at here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, all right, so there it is. It all kind of somehow makes sense if you argue each individual scenario down to its conclusion, but we're speculating on those conclusions, which again I hate to sound like I'm beating a dead horse here, but it's why this is so pointless, and yet it's so strange that we are hypnotically drawn to it. You know, it's like that proverbial train wreck. You can't turn away from it, even though you don't want to see it. You can't turn away from it because it's just too doggone enticing to see the twisted damage. We've been raised in the last era, the last 100 years, or I don't know how long it's been since motion pictures, but we've been raised to watch destruction on big screens. When we see it in real life, we can't turn away, even if we don't want to see it. Well, I don't want to be talking about this because it doesn't matter until the end of the season, and yet here we are. I can't turn away from it. I'm stuck staring at it. You know,
the only thing I could do to not give them power is to not actually watch the show on Tuesday night, because we're going to spend a lot of time on it otherwise.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know what? Amen. That's it. I won't give them the satisfaction of pulling me in among their ratings on the Tuesday night show, but I will indeed talk about it on Wednesday afternoons, and oftentimes on Monday or Tuesday before they have it, just because, well, we don't really have much else to do there. Hey, real quick, because I only have a couple of minutes before we got to stop and turn this over and get ready for a conversation with Toledo head coach Jason Candle. Rockets play Ball State tonight at the Glass Bowl. Maybe you're going out to the game, so if you want a little kind of a preview of it with Jason Candle, we'll have him coming up here in just a couple of minutes. He'll talk to Jim Cushlin. But before I do that, I find it very, very interesting, the story of Charles Walker, the Oklahoma defensive lineman. I don't know if you followed this earlier today or not, but this young man has had multiple concussions. He was an all Big 12 second team pick last year, but he missed the semifinal game against Clemson with a concussion. This year he's only played in 4 games, also because of a concussion. So he has decided to pack it in. He is quitting the team, although they don't want to characterize it as that, but he is declining to play in the rest of the season, even if the Oklahoma Sooners make it to the national playoffs. All so that he can make sure his head is right and his health is right in anticipation of being a draft pick in the National Football League. And according to some of the scouts, they say he would be a first-day pick as a defensive lineman if he does indeed pass all the physicals and his health checks out. So rather than putting millions of dollars in jeopardy by possibly suffering a third concussion in college, he is pulling away and saying, I'm going to go prepare for the draft. Defense coordinator Mike Stoops made that announcement earlier today. Coach Bob Stoops didn't have much to say about it, although they've just basically said this is his decision. Some are criticizing him, saying he's quitting on his teammates in what still could be a championship year. Others are saying you don't pay your bills with championships. You pay your bills with dollars, dollars you get when you become an NFL draft pick. Tomorrow on this program, we're going to break that down a little bit and talk about whether or not it's selfish for college players to want to put their health above the teams they have committed to and the scholarships they have received in trying to help a team win a championship if they choose to leave early and go get ready for the National Football League draft. Very, very interesting and unique, and very sad story in a lot of ways, too, which we're going to hit up on tomorrow. But right now, we're going to take another SportsCenter timeout here, and after that, we'll talk with Jason Candle, UT and Ball State. UT and Ball State coming up tonight, and we're going to talk to Jason Candle about that. By the way, before we get to the college gridiron again with UT game, we got to shine a spotlight on those KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week, which we do each and every Wednesday. And for the girls, want to say congrats to Bedford, Michigan Volleyball. The Kicking Mules advanced to the Michigan State Semifinals for the second time in 3 years with their three-set win over Livonia Churchill Tuesday. Taylor Haberland led with 24 digs, and Heidi Fowles led with 20 kills as Bedford now takes on Rockford in the state semis on Friday. And for the boys, it's got to be Anthony Wayne's defense. The Generals D forced 5 turnovers in their 14-6 win over at Avon Lake on Friday, marking the first time Anthony Wayne has ever advanced to the third round of the playoffs. Trevor Pennell had 2 interceptions, while the fumbles were recovered by Johnny Rupp, Dawson Zaleski, and Sean Mowry. So there you go. Bedford Volleyball and Anthony Wayne Football Defense. They are your KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. Now we'll graduate from high school into the college ranks, talking about the UT Rockets and Ball State. Coach Candle coming up next.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kuslin here hanging out with you. Time to talk some college football. The Toledo Rockets now at 8-2. Home finale tonight against Ball State. And to talk all things Toledo Rocket football, we once again welcome in the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, to the program. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim.
Not too bad. And, 31-24 a week ago. Let's start there. Getting the win at Northern Illinois, something that's been so hard to come by for this Rockets program these last couple of years. And even then, it was still an absolute struggle in this one. You guys were down 14-3 at the break. What turned this thing around after the locker room at halftime?
Yeah, I think, first of all, hats off to Northern Illinois. You know, that's a proud tradition and a proud program, and you know, they were playing to keep their season alive from the perspective of maybe getting to a bowl game. And you know, that Toledo NIU rivalry is, you know, gone on for some years now. So, you know, I give them a lot of credit for playing very well and playing very hard. And certainly, like you mentioned, it wasn't the start that we wanted to get down in the first half, but to be able to bounce back and ultimately finish the game the way we did and play probably our best 30 minutes of football, and maybe the entire season, you know, at the time when we needed the most. I thought that was huge, and really give a lot of credit to our senior class, you know, kind of rallying together and deciding that this wasn't the way it was going to go down this year, and finishing the game off.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that second half, you get a couple of more touchdown passes from Logan Woodside, as well as Kareem Hunt in there, and he had an outstanding game. So you're just as we always have been, Coach, we're mixing in some of the young guys and some of the more veteran guys to get some things done.
Yeah, I got a lot of good players on the offensive side of the ball. You know, it certainly starts, you know, with a sound running game and, you know, those guys up front, and then, you know, quarterback's been able to benefit from, you know, the companionship of Kareem Hunt in the backfield with him, and certainly the good offensive line. So, you know, what he's been able to do this year, you know, from the quarterback, you know, position has been, you know, it's been awesome. You know, it's starting to get some national attention and get some national accolades, and, you know, his name's going to go onto the Heisman ballot, which is huge for the city of Toledo and, you know, for our university and certainly for our football team. But he's every award or mention of awards that he's gotten, he's certainly deserving of, because his preparation is second to none.
Yeah, and let's talk about that real quick now that you brought it up. Woodside in this one at Northern Illinois, 23 of 33, 286, 3 touchdowns, did have the 1 pick. But as we know, Coach, he's been so solid all season long, and you just kind of touched on it. But what does it mean overall, not just for the city, but for the program, to be able to have a guy who's on the not the watch list, that's a preseason thing, but is going to, in theory, be in the mix for them? That is huge.
Well, I think it's incredible, you know, and certainly testament to his work ethic and certainly, you know, what he's been able to accomplish. I mean, you're talking, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, he's competing for a starting quarterback job, you know what I mean? And to go out and have the season he's had, and certainly, you know, he does what the quarterback is asked to do in our offense and make great decisions and make everybody else around you better. And I think that's, he's been able to do that on a consistent level. Our team has benefited from that. And, you know, a lot of players are, you know, reaping the benefits of his hard work and preparation too around him. you know, and I think that's been really fun to watch and really cool to see, you know, and I think, you know, at a time where sometimes college athletics, you get some attention or a lot of attention for some of the negative things that go on across college football. This is a really, you know, a good story and a positive light for a guy who's just really busted his tail to do things right.
So very well said, Coach. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. And even though usually guys like Woodside, Mac players, they're not necessarily going to win the award. May not even end up, you know, in New York. But what does it mean for not just UT, but for the Mac in general to get this kind of recognition?
Well, I think it's awesome. I think it certainly is. And like you said, you may not get there. You know, you may not win it, but your name is certainly mentioned with a lot of great players across the country. You know, but the bottom line is the guy leads the country in touchdown passes. He should be on it. You know what I mean? He's done what he's asked to do. He's played his position arguably as good as anybody in the entire country. He should get recognized for that. You know what I mean? And as coaches, as you start the season off, you prepare and you tell these guys, you know, this is what the blueprint looks like and this is how you have to go attack each and every day. Never batted an eye, just done it and done it to the best of his ability. He's made, you know, routine days. His routine days are better than anybody else's routine days, and that's, you know, in life or in football, if you're able to do that, you're probably going to go pretty far.
Yeah, and to that end, you mentioned it, Coach, and he has 37 touchdowns, and there's still two games regular season-wise to play, so absolutely hats off to a Logan Woodside for that. Another guy, by the way, who is on, at least preseason-wise, some watch lists for their position, Kareem Hunt, the senior. He had, to me, one of his more solid games. He's had, I think, some better overall ones, but I think this is an absolutely solid game, and it helped the Rockets, especially offensively, in that second half when you guys were turning this around. 19 carries, buck 22, had the last touchdown that proved to be the game winner on this one. Talk to me about his efforts, of course, in this one and overall in the season.
I can't really put into perspective what he means to our football team. It's really hard for me to comprehend all of that and you know, give you that in a short amount of time. But, you know, all you need to know is you need to watch that game and turn on the 3rd-and-3 play where he catches the ball in the flat and the linebacker's, you know, got him, doesn't even see the line, you know, he doesn't even see him coming. He sticks him pretty good. He spins out of the tackle. Instead of being 4th-and-4, he makes a play, just an effort play, gets the first down. Our drive continues. The very next play, we hit John Vay on a long pass to get us down and scoring inside the 10, and he ultimately goes in and finishes it. So, you know, just a great senior with a great attitude and, you know, that refuse-to-lose mentality, and, you know, that just certainly works for everything he gets as well. You know, really, really proud of that guy. And like I said, it's really tough for me to put into perspective what that guy means for our program.
Talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza, and Kareem Hunt had the 1 yard touchdown run to cap off the final drive, a 10-play, 71-yard drive with the ball game tied, I might add, in that fourth quarter. What was your thought process, Coach, going through that final drive?
Go down and score. you know, you don't really have a thought process when you're at that time. I think you call plays that you know will give your team the best chance to be successful. You rely on, you know, the preparation and the week of work of practice and, you know, the experiences and the situations that these guys have been in the past. I mean, we've been in that situation before and we haven't, you know, in years past, and we didn't get it done. We didn't finish, you know, and that's why there is a six-game losing streak to Northern Illinois, because they did. They made the plays they needed to make. So, you know, hopefully that's a step in the right direction for our program, as I think it is. Really showed a lot of resolve to go down and to get that final score and ultimately put the game away.
Yeah, and let's talk about that because, you know, as you mentioned, Coach, it was, past tense, of course, 6-game losing streak for the Rockets against Northern Illinois, meaning the senior class, for example, had never beaten the Huskies. And, you know, in this one, at one point in the midway through the third quarter, you guys are trailing in their yard 21-10, or actually not in their yard. This game was played at the White Sox Stadium at U.S., formerly known as U.S. Cellular. But you guys are down 21-10. Was there ever a doubt amongst your players? Because sometimes when you haven't beaten a certain team, no matter what your circumstances, sometimes that doubt can creep in. But the way this game finished, that clearly didn't happen.
Well, I think that may have showed up on the surface a little bit in the first half, but certainly, you know, at halftime we eliminated all that doubt and reminded ourselves of, you know, all the effort and the time and energy and the hard work that was put in over a year's time, you know, to get to moments like these. And, you know, we've all sat there in that locker room before and tasted the, you know, what defeat feels like and tastes like after those type of losses. So, you know, like I said, I think our kids just kind of rallied around each other and, you know, didn't let any doubt creep in and foster and grow because we certainly weren't perfect in that second half. But, you know, we made the plays we needed to make to win the football game. And at the end of the day, that's all that really matters.
Exactly. And to that end, we haven't talked about this, Coach, in a couple of weeks. But hats off to the defense later in this game, the second half of that third quarter and the entire fourth quarter. After going down 21-10, defense holds them to just three, forces a turnover, and the offense takes care of the rest. So time to give some kudos to the Rocket defense, which we haven't done in a few weeks.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, a lot of proud players over there on that side of the football, you know, and, you know, very, you know, those guys coach them hard and, you know, they are a well-coached unit, you know what I mean? And it's a, you know, you're talking about a defensive unit that's at the beginning of the season, you know, you're in that football game right there the other night, you're playing without your starting will linebacker and your two starting defensive tackles. So a lot of guys got to step up. You know, you're talking about one of the better, if not the best, downhill running team in our conference who's just going to come right at you and challenge you from a physicality standpoint. So a lot of guys had to step up, you know, and they did. Played a lot of great individual efforts that led to ultimately the team goal winning the game.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza after the 31-24 win to break the skid against Northern Illinois. Now it's back to the Glass Bowl tonight, Coach. Final regular season home game anyway. Western Michigan's on the road next week, but it's Ball State coming into the Glass Bowl tonight. What can you tell us about them, and what are your plans to stop them?
Well, it'd be a great night in the Glass Bowl, certainly. We're going to pay tribute to a great senior class that's given a lot to our football program and given their heart and soul to this city of being great student athletes and, you know, outstanding citizens here for our program. So, you know, certainly going to recognize them. You know, we know we got a tough opponent, you know, that we're going to face, and, you know, Ball State offense that, you know, has a tremendous running back and a really good couple good receivers that can hurt you and a quarterback that's very capable of hitting the spots he needed to hit. You know, and we're going to play against a defense that's, you know, has seven senior starters, and some of those guys are fifth-year guys, so they're a very veteran group, you know, much like our kids, you know, first-year coaching staff for them. Give them a lot of credit because they've embraced change and dealt with it and handled it and keep fighting and are in position in November to still be playing for a bowl game. So we know we'll get their best effort.
It's the Rockets hosting the Ball State Cardinals at the Glass Bowl. Kickoff tonight at 7. Coach, best of luck out there. Looking forward to talking with you again next week as we're getting closer and closer to the end of this regular season. Thanks so much, Coach.
Thanks so much, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes to give us the lowdown on the Rockets. Ball State tonight at the Glass Bowl. It should be a fun atmosphere tonight, especially considering this is the home finale. So you're going to have all those extra festivities for the seniors and all that good stuff. But I want to go back to last week's real quick against Northern Illinois. You know, we for the last 6 years, when both teams have been outstanding, it's always been the Northern Illinois Huskies getting the better of the Toledo Rockets. Now, this year, Northern Illinois, as we've stated a bunch of times, not the team they have been. In fact, the loss to the Rockets last week dropped Northern Illinois to 3-7, which means they will not be going bowling in any way, shape, or form. Rockets 8-2. We know they're going to a bowl game of some kind, but it not only gets the monkey off the back, gives good vibes mentally, because Coach admitted it right there. They were doing everything they can to not let the doubt creep in, which is very easy to do in the middle of that third quarter when you've lost six in a row to this opponent. Everything seems to always go bad at the worst times, and that's part of the reason why it was six losses in a row. And here you are in a situation on the road. Even though it was technically a neutral site game in Chicago, still, it's more or less in their backyard, and you find yourself down 21-10. I've seen many a times when a team in that situation with that kind of skid against an individual opponent will mentally pack it in. Credit to the Rockets for not doing that and showing at least in 2016 why the Toledo Rockets are the better team in this particular matchup. And then when you have guys like Kareem Hunt and Logan Woodside. Kareem Hunt started the year on the watch list for running backs in college football. And now Logan Woodside is, even if he may not go to win the award or even go to New York, he's now on a quote-unquote watch list, if you will, for the Heisman. And he should be, as Coach pointed out, leads the nation in touchdown passes. We've said over and over again how just awesome this offense for the Toledo Rockets really is, and they needed to step up big in that second half, and they did, and it was combined with some defensive plays that were made to keep the Huskies in check, force a turnover. They only held them to 3 points after going down 21-10, and then you get that final drive, and you know, Coach, I love that, matter-of-factly saying, well, our goal on that drive was to score. I was looking for any kind of game plan thought he might have of how he was arranging some of his plays, because it was a 10-play, eat-the-clock kind of drive that the Rockets were able to pull off towards the end of that game. What was it? It took 3 minutes, but it was a 10-play, 71-yard drive that was capped off by Kareem Hunt's touchdown, and his only touchdown of the day, but it proved to be the game winner in a game that at that point was tied. And this was after the Rockets had taken a 24-21 lead, and about the only bad thing that really happened in the latter part of this second half for the Rockets is they gave up a bad field position, really, that allowed Northern Illinois to eventually cap it off with a field goal to retie this game. So great resilient effort by the Rockets. They finally get the monkey off their back that was losing to North.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.